The clerk will announce the roll.
36 present, 4 absent.
Mr. Speaker, even though I voted on your machine, I assume that I'll be shown as present over in my other desk. Mr. Speaker, Representatives Carpenter, Guy, Malone, and Schaefer are excused from the call of the House today.
For the record, should show that for the balance of today, I'll be voting at the, on the speaker's machine, and Representative Gardner will be voting at mine. We don't seem to have a chaplain this morning. On the spur of the moment here, I'm going to again call on Representative Swanson, if he would give us a brief prayer. Members rise.
In the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost, bless us this day. Let us walk as individuals together. Let us not tread upon our neighbor. We ask this in your name. Amen.
Clerk.
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Bradley.
I'd like to move and ask unanimous consent that prayer be spread upon the journal.
Hearing no objections, so ordered. The chief clerk certify the journal.
As chief clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 51st day.
Mr. Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, I'd move and ask unanimous consent that journal for the 51st day be approved as certified.
Hearing no objection, the journal is certified as read. Do we have introduction of guests? Representative Buckhold.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In Gallery B is a very good friend of mine. She is, has lived in Juneau for some time, but just returned from a visit from South Carolina where her family lives, and a very active member of the Filipino community of Juneau, Ms. Melly James.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I'm going to make an introduction that relates to a demonstration that's happening this evening at 5 p.m. at the Gold Room, not the Gaston Suite as previously announced tonight, and also that relates to the activities of the House Select Committee on Telecommunications this week. Speaker, in Gallery A is Mr. Robert Wold, who heads a company that bears his name in California, who is in the business of pooling together broadcasters for, among other things, use of satellite facilities. And if that sounds very familiar, Mr. Speaker, that's exactly what the state is doing right now. And he is one of the persons, his company is one of the companies that has responded to the request for proposals. It's reflected in the thick report that all of us got last week. Mr. Robert Wold, California.
Are there further introduction of guests? Messages from the governor?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the other house?
The president appointed the following members to the special committee to consider, royalty oil sales proposals. Senator Coletta, chairman. Senator Poland. Senator Rhodey. Senator Sackett. Senator Sumner. The Senate has passed House Bill Number 611, the supplemental appropriation to the Office of the Governor Telecommunications with the following amendments. This has been duplicated and placed on each member's desk. And so House Bill Number 611, amended Senate, is transmitted for consideration. I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Communications?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of standing committees.
The Committee on Resources has had Senate Bill 414, a special appropriation to the Department of Natural Resources Agriculture Revolving Loan Fund, under consideration, and a majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 414, and that it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Osterback, chairman, concurred in by Malone, Bennett, Eliason, Smith, Urien, Akers, and Osterback. Senate Bill 414 has a further referral to finance. The Committee on Finance has had House Bill 551, providing an exemption for senior citizens from payment for land leased from the state, under consideration, and a majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 551, and that it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Cooper, chairman, concurred in by Cooper, Freeman, Rhodes, Haugen, Schaefer, Swanson, Buckhold, Duncan, and Greening. House Bill 551 has no further referral. The Committee on Resources has had House Bill 720 relating to home sites under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 720 and that it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Osterbach, Chairman, concurred in by Malone, Bennett, Smith, Akers, and Osterbach. Having no recommendation, Eliason and Urien. House Bill 720 has a further referral to Finance. The Committee on Finance has had House Bill 744, a supplemental appropriation to the Department of Natural Resources for the Iditarod Trail Race under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Cooper, Chairman, concurred in by Greening, Swanson, Schaefer, Haugen, Rode, Freeman, and Cooper. House Bill 744 has no further referral. The Committee on Finance has had sponsor substitute for House Bill 760 relating to the registration tax on motor vehicles under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it do pass pending receipt of the new physical note. The report was signed by Mr. Cooper, Chairman, concurred in by Freeman, Rode, Haugen, Schaefer, Swanson, Buchholz, Duncan, Greening, and Cooper. Sponsor substitute for House Bill 760 has no further referral. The Committee on State Affairs has had sponsor substitute for House Bill 764, a special appropriation to the Department of Natural Resources for site planning, design, and engineering of campground accommodations on the Skagway Car Cross Highway under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it do pass. Report was signed by Mr. NACAC Vice Chairman, concurred in by NACAC Miles, McKinnon, Kelly, Lathine, and Dankworth. Sponsor substitute for House Bill 764 has a further referral to Finance. The Committee on Hess has had House Bill 780, a special appropriation to the National Council on Alcoholism, Alaska Region, under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Parr, Chairman, concurred in by NACAC, Chatterton, OC, Buchholz, Cotton, and Parr. House Bill 780 has a further referral to Finance. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of special committees?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of citations and resolutions?
There's a citation congratulating Blas D. Malasardi, which is on the calendar for today. I have no further introduction of citations or resolutions, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction, first reading, reference of House Bill or of bills.
Sponsor substitute for House Bill number 693 by Dankworth, Swanson, Akers, et al. An act relating to the use of marijuana and its concentrated extracts and providing for an effective date.
HESS and Judiciary.
House Bill 864 by the State Affairs Committee. An act creating an Office of Equal Employment Opportunity in the Office of the Governor.
I'm assigning this at this time to Labor and Management. I will ask Mr. Bradley, who is committee is the original sponsor on this bill, to consider whether he as well would like that legislation. If he would, I'm sure if you approach Speaker Malone later, he'll be glad to assign it to that committee as well. But for the time being, I'll just give it to Labor and Management.
I have no further bills for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Bring this down to consideration of the daily calendar. Will the clerk please read the first item on the daily calendar?
House Bill 652 by the Rules Committee by request for the Steering Council for Alaska Lands, an act making a special appropriation to the Department of Natural Resources for disbursement to the Steering Council on Alaska Lands and providing for an effective date. The Committee on Resources has had House Bill 652 under consideration, and the committee reports it back with individual recommendations. The report was signed by Mr. Osterbach, signing Dupass, Malone, Snyder, and Osterbach. Having no recommendation, Miller, Bennett, and Eliason. Signing do not pass unless amended, Urien. Signing do not pass, Akers. The Committee on Finance has had House Bill 652 under consideration, and a majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 652, and that it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Cooper, Chairman, concurred in by Meekin, Swanson, Freeman, Rode, Buchholz, Schaefer, Duncan, Cooper, Guy, and Greening. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 652 be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Mr. Gardner moves the adoption of the Finance Committee substitute in lieu of the original bill. Is there objection? Hearing none, the committee substitute is adopted. Are there amendments?
I have no amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that committee substitute for House Bill 652 be engrossed and advanced to third reading and placed on final passage.
Mr. Gardner moves advancement from second to third reading. Is there objection? Hearing none, the bill is in third reading. Would the clerk please read the bill in third reading?
Committee substitute for House Bill Number 652 by the Finance Committee, an act making a special appropriation to the Department of Natural Resources for disbursement to the Steering Council for Alaska Lands and providing for an effective date.
Mr. Miles? The House stand at ease. Back to order. House Bill 652 is before us in third reading. Mr. Cooper?
Mr. Speaker, before we get into the merits, if any, of the bill, I would like to state to the members that the D2 Council had a meeting yesterday afternoon, and at the meeting, the Council unanimously adopted the policy that any legislator desiring to present Alaska's D2 position to other states and other legislatures would be able to do so, with the understanding that nobody would be allowed to go unless they went over the bill and studied the various issues involved in the D2 legislation and really understood what they were talking about, so that whoever was sent to these legislatures would be able to make a knowledgeable presentation of the whole issue. And with that limitation, we did adopt the policy that all legislators would be eligible and would be allowed to go on those trips. I would point out that under the present law, there would be no compensation for expenses on those trips. Only fair to point that out, if you remember of the legislature. We did have a bill here that would have solved that problem. However, there's some doubt as to whether it's going to pass. As to the appropriation itself, I want to run down basically what it is in there. The first item is $85,722, which would cover the rent on the present office in Anchorage. It's presently being extensively used. And also two staff members. This is the rent and the salaries and benefits from now until the end of this year or the passage of the D2 legislation, whichever occurs earlier. There's $12,000 for media advice for national and regional purposes. And I might at this point explain that many of these items were in substantial dispute among the members of the council, but the majority of the council voted to approve this funding, and this is what's being presented here. And of course, the Finance Committee also looked at it. The third item is a Travel and Speakers Bureau of $102,500 that would include $70,000, which would take care of the travel of the members of the legislature, and that is the travel to other state legislatures. And it would also cover, incidentally, in conjunction with the $18,000 that's left over from last year's appropriation to the Legislative Council, it would also cover if the body decided to descend on Washington en masse, there is enough money in there when added to the $18,000 to cover it. The next item is $40,000 for telephone, telegraph, and telex bills, which is consistent with the experience so far. Legal representation is probably the single most important item in the budget. It amounts to $200,000. What we've got in Washington is we have one firm that's devoted the time of three lawyers full time. On D2 monitoring and lobbying and logistics. There's also a paraprofessional working with that firm who's also full-time. There's a second firm that's also devoting a full-time lawyer to it. Now, the reason why we need two law firms is that the second firm which came in was a law firm whose senior partner is former U.S. Senator Ted Moss from the state of Utah. Senator Moss is a former Democratic senator. He was defeated in his last election bid in 1976, but he's very friendly with the Democratic members of the Senate. He's very close to many of the key people in the House, and it's one of the best moves that we've made so far. His firm has allocated $50,000. The Birch firm has allocated $150,000 because they're the people who are monitoring the proceedings on the Hill every day. Okay. Materials reproduction, including copies of slides, maps, film segments, Xeroxing, and that sort of thing, is $11,500. The printing of brochures and other mail-out materials is $13,000. Graphics design is $4,000. Radio production, and this is for use in Washington, and we've already done that quite successfully, I think, $6,000. TV for film production and broadcast time purchase. And this is something that was in substantial dispute in the council. The dispute was whether the need should be obvious before we go and ask for the money. It is a contingent need. We may need it and we may not, but the council elected to go ahead and put that in the budget with the assumption that we wouldn't use it if we didn't have to, and it could be lapsed back in the general fund. That would be include TV film production and time buys in some of the major cities in the country where we feel that we'll be able to present our point of view so that it would matter in the Congress. $50,000 is for space purchase in newspapers in key regions, same type of thing. $10,000 for direct mail to Congress, legislatures, and the Alaska public. $25,000 for survey research. That's a surveying of congressional attitudes. We've done that once, and it's been very, very useful. And also, we have the opportunity to buy some questions in a Harris or Gallup poll, which would poll the attitudes of people in other parts of the country. $13,000 for special consultants on a short-term basis. This would include things like economic impact in other parts of the country and that sort of thing. This is also a contingent appropriation. $12,500 for reports concerning regionalized knowledge and evaluations in other parts of the country. There's a $12,000 miscellaneous item which covers things like, videotape machine rentals and office supplies and this sort of thing. There is an item of $145,000 which would fund a U.S. news media feed campaign. What that is it essentially the purpose of that is to send a representative down to talk to all the editors of every major U.S. daily newspaper that's in the country, and to talk to the editorial staffs of those newspapers and to try to present our viewpoint. Probably the person who will be sent is Red Boucher, who has already done that on behalf of the pipeline. He knows many of the editors. Some of the editors are very close friends of his, and he's kept up with them. That would be the proposal. It has not been presented to the council yet, but I would expect it to be presented in about 2 weeks. The final item is $15,000, which is the funding of a workshop on joint management. As many of you know, that item is in dispute. All the people who or almost all of the people who are from Alaska do advocate joint management of lands in Alaska between the state and the federal government. It's being opposed vociferously in Washington because they don't believe such a scheme will work. However, the council believes that if we're able to construct such a mechanism properly and present it to the Congress, then it will work. So that's the purpose of this workshop, to put together something in final form. This will be done by the Joint Federal-State Land Use Planning Commission, and this is just our contribution to that seminar. The figure, the final figure, is $896,000. It is $65,000 over the original figure that was submitted by the D2 Council. The extra items are $50,000 more for the lawyers, and that was just a result of a mistake in the original presentation to the D2 Council. And the other is the $15,000 that I just mentioned for the workshop on joint management. So, Mr. Speaker, that is the D2 Council's budget. As I say, some of it is sort of flexible. It's contingent on the need for such projects, but we believe that the funding should be granted at this time, and if it isn't needed, it'll lapse back into the general fund as of the end of this calendar year. This does represent all the projected expenses of the D2 Council for the rest of its existence. We won't be back again unless it's the wish of the body that we add in other expenses. Thank you.
Representative Bradley.
Mr. Speaker, I'd first like to compliment the D2 Steering Council and its chairman for the specific works on this appropriation bill. Secondly, I think it's a timely topic to bring up today because Representative Urien's bill is coming before in resolution for adjournment and funding for the full legislature to go back to Washington, D.C. is coming up today in the House State Affairs Committee. I think we all know this is a very important topic and a very controversial Alaska versus the South 48 and some special interest groups. I just thought I'd give my kudos to Republicans and Democrats alike. Thank you.
Representative Hayes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As Representative Cooper mentioned, this budget does reflect the majority of the members of the D2 Council. There were some of us, which includes myself, that felt more emphasis should be put on a media campaign, and therefore there should be more dollars. But there is some money in here for that, but not to the extent that myself and a few others felt that there should be. My purpose, though, in prefacing these remarks, or my remarks, are that yesterday that Senator Orsini made a proposal to the D2 Steering Council for funding for a national D2 media campaign. I am under the impression that the council will be bringing this up at our next meeting in about 2 weeks, and possibly, depending on the consensus of the council, we may very well be back before the legislature for additional funds to sponsor that program.
Is there further debate? Ms. Representative Urien.
Mr. Speaker, I'm going to support this bill today, and I'm going to do it for several reasons. First of all, it's the only show in town. It's the only effort that the legislature is putting forth to try and influence the outcome of the D2 legislation in Washington, D.C., and I feel that's imperative that we do so. Secondly, Mr. Speaker, the chairman of the D2 Steering Council has come under a little bit of criticism because of his possible conflict in his current race for his congressional seat. But, Mr. Speaker, I believe that Mr. Cooper has demonstrated adequately to me so far that he's keeping the politics out of the issue, and I think that's necessary that he do so. If there comes a time when he is unable to do that, then it would be my intention to do whatever I could to criticize him personally for that, but without criticizing the efforts of the D2 Steering Council. And thirdly, Mr. Speaker, we are under a little bit of fire, I think, because we really have no position. As a body, we have stated no position. We have taken none. And I think that's rightfully so. We should do what we can to adopt a legislative position that would guide the D2 Steering Council. And I note that the D2 Steering Council has adopted several resolutions, which is they see as their position on it, on the issue. And none of their resolutions I find objectionable with my feelings on the issue. And I note that the resolutions they have adopted are paralleled in a committee substitute for Senate Joint Resolution number 41, which presently lies within this body. It has passed the body on the other end of the hall. And I would hope that we would expedite passage of this resolution and lay to rest once and for all the fact that we have no position. Once that is done, we will have stated our position on D2 lands. And that will give backing to the steering council and give everyone who speaks on the issue a direction which to take. And there is, once that is done, Mr. Speaker, I think that there will be additional funding bills before us that will, where we can really start spending some money to advertise in the lower 48 what our position is. The funding bills that will come before us at a later date will be substantial amounts that we will show our willingness to advertise in the South 48 how we feel and try to convince those in the lower 48 that Alaskans do not wish to tear up all our lands, that we are willing to set some aside forever, and that we are responsible people. And I hope the body adopts this bill and ultimately adopts Senate Concurrent Resolution number 41, and then at a later date some additional funding bills for media campaigns in the South 48.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, Pro Tem, I certainly will not have a prejudiced view toward any future appropriation request by the D2 Council for media in the event I vote for this legislation. I hope they'll use my voice under the current circumstances in their radio ads. While people are passing out awards, I'd like to congratulate the minority leader for making a very responsible comment on the bill. He points out something I think is rather crucial, and there have been too many, as Mr. Cooper has, Mr. Hayes has, others have. There's a very crucial mistake, a serious mistake being made by a lot saying the D2 issue is a conflict between development and no development forces. But really, to us, and I think that we're right, the D2 issue is a question of whether or not Alaska is to be trusted in making the decisions that address that issue, as well as other issues when involving itself with the discussion of the federal lands within its borders. If you were to talk to somebody in a state who has a residence or a community that adjoins a large federal reservation of lands, and say that his state legislature, his local government, was not competent to address the management decisions with regard to those lands, whether it was fish and game or anything else, he'd be insulted. And I think most people supporting other bills other than we support outside don't realize that this really is the insult that Alaska is being handed. And I'd like to commend the minority leader for raising that issue in a very responsible and apolitical comment.
Mr. Dankworth.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to vote for this bill probably this morning because I think that we need some unanimity in what we do. However, I'd kind of like to go on record as saying that in my own judgment, there's some of it that I don't think is in the best interest of the taxpayer, in the sense that, and I'm speaking specifically, I just have problems wondering whether all of us going off to different states and visiting with different people is going to have the impact we'd like to have it, and whether we'll get our money's worth out of those kind of trips. I feel a little frustrated. We're standing around with some money in our pocket, and we have a real need to do something. So anybody comes up with an idea, we seem to jump on it. But I personally don't think that's a good expenditure. I think it could be spent better. Secondly, I just like to go on record as being one person that don't believe in joint management. I don't think that I never have liked it, and I'm no better people than I have studied it, and they seem to like it. But I'm going to say that 25 or 50 years from now, for those of us who are helping to shape the destiny of Alaska, will rue the day that we made a deal with the federal government to manage our private land. I think it's a mistake. I'd rather own a little home than rent a big house. I don't need a landlord. And with that, I'll sit down. Thank you.
Is there further debate? Representative Greening.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to urge the body to support this, but I'd like to make a few comments on the work that the council has done so far. As a prime sponsor of the legislation that brought this council into being, I am I'm gratified that the council has done to date a very credible job. And in terms of taking a position, it isn't merely a position of, say, let's oppose the H.R. 39 or let's oppose a certain bill, because as legislators, we're well aware that that position is a very weak one to take when you know that a legislation dealing with the four systems, dealing with federal lands in Alaska, is going to pass. Therefore, you've got to take a position on some positive action in order to shape it for the best benefit of all Alaskans. And I think the council has done a very credible job in showing that there is a position between those stated by what has been known as extreme developers and the extreme preservationists. I think the council has demonstrated to a number of congressmen that there's a lot of information they need to know to make an intelligent decision. And already they've helped affect changes in an extreme position that existed in the original H.R. 39. Now, on the question of joint management, that's one that maybe the council hasn't taken an absolute position on yet, but it's one that bears further scrutiny, because it's not a question of just whether the federal government is going to manage our lands, but it's what they're going to do with their lands. And if we can produce a mechanism that allows the state to have some input on what happens on federal lands, that I think that will be an asset to all the people in the state. Furthermore, the proposals that are now being discussed affect state land. In other words, H.R. 39 and some of the other proposals can affect the way we presently deal with our land. So it isn't a question of whether joint management is going to have federal control stated on or placed over our own lands now. It's already being advocated, so that our rights to manage fish and game resources, our rights to use the land that's already supposedly granted to us under the Statehood Act, is already threatened. And so I think the council has to take an active and a positive stance on some of these issues, including investigating the joint management approach or cooperative management approach, which would give us some say over federal lands. And in the process, I hope that we eliminate the conflict that these pieces of legislation have on our statehood entitlements. And there is an item in this appropriation to further examine that question of joint or cooperative management. But right now, they're doing a very credible job, and I'm most happy that the council has progressed the stage it has, and that I think we should feel free to entertain further expenditures. But I'm glad to see that some of the Republican members are questioning the blanket approach to sending 60 people back to Washington, because I think the council intelligent, informed, targeted response is far better way to go than a mass, say, invasion of Washington. I'm glad to see the Republicans are coming around on that point.
Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, sometimes we tend to confuse means with ends. In response to Representative Dankworth, I have some trouble with that joint management approach, too, because, frankly, I don't think the feds are going to really go for it to the extent that we would. But I look at it only as a means to an end. I think we are all convinced that land, once it's put into one of the four systems, is going to be very difficult to get back out of there. I won't say impossible, but it's going to be very, very difficult. And I think our hope is that the cooperative management or joint management is simply a means to the end of ensuring that not all the land gets put into those four systems, and that, in fact, a relatively small portion of it, so that there won't be decisions made which are premature. The decisions won't be made on that land until we really know what's there. And I would feel fairly safe in saying that no one of the 60 members of the legislature knows what's there on all that land. In fact, I would almost feel safe in saying that nobody on the D2, on the Joint Land Use Planning Commission, knows everything about what's on all that land. So I think that the means that the joint management or cooperative management is simply a means to hopefully give us time to find out what is there before the decisions are made. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, maybe I'm making up for a few days that I've been absent, but while the prime sponsor of the D2 Steering Council legislation is offering advice to them, maybe a few of the rest of us can, since some of the members are listening in this body. And it would seem to me that the concerns Mr. Dankworth raised are good ones. I had the same concerns when the Coman's proposal was originally announced by the administration about 3 years ago. Mr. Speaker, it is a politically viable suggestion, and when we deal here with political issues, we know how our minds work. And I hope that there's not really a generically different kind of person in Washington, unless better. And the other thing is that I think that as long as the D2 Steering Council and others who wish to try to speak for Alaska make it clear that we're not interested in something that will effectively cause a federal veto, which was my original concern, over decisions, well, actually will be cooperative management, that there's nothing really otherwise wrong with the concept of cooperative management, because it really means that the state will have an involvement with federal lands as well as state lands after the final decision's made. And maybe to the laundry list of perhaps everybody doesn't know things that my colleague from Fairbanks was just mentioning, it may be, like me, other members of this body do not already know all of the provisions in the various D2 bills. So while the State Affairs Committee is considering the other legislation that's been praised and condemned on this floor regarding possibly sending a bunch of us or all of us off to Washington, they might also consider the issue as to whether or not, if that passes, that they should include specific provisions or at least a letter of intent regarding very thorough briefing by the D2 Steering Council and its staff of any such legislators before they would go. I'm generally in favor of the legislation.
Representative Kelly.
And Mr. Speaker, in response to Representative Greening's remark, I haven't heard any Republicans on this floor indicate that they're not in favor of sending 60 legislators back to Washington. Mr. Speaker, a maxim of Napoleon's that when you're in a battle, you concentrate your force at the focal point of the battle. The focal point of this battle is in Washington, D.C. I have reservations about dissipating our resources by sending a legislator here or a legislator there scurrying throughout the nation. This battle is being fought in Washington, D.C., and that's where we should be concentrating our efforts. And 60 of us going back to Washington, D.C. would make a tremendous impact on the national news media and would do a great deal to get our story across to the American people. And that, in turn, would influence their congressional representatives. So I haven't heard any Republicans talk about that position. As a matter of fact, Mr. Speaker, I think this has been an outstanding debate in the terms of the nonpartisan of it. And I just hope it continues in that vein.
Representative Green.
Mr. Speaker, speaking of Napoleon, I wanted to remind the Republican colleague what happened to Napoleon at Waterloo. I think the comment was made that it would be probably a mistake to send a lot of people traveling around, and I think that ought to be examined. Each legislator ought to examine that as to whether he or she can contribute something. But I think the comments that I heard before Mr. Kelly got up were that this kind of mass expenditure for mass travel expenditure might not be effective. I think we ought to examine that. And I've heard that proposition advanced before. But the main purpose of this appropriation is for other items, and I think they're all good and worthy, and I think we ought to get on with it so that they can get moving on the program.
Mr. Dankworth, and then Mr.
Just a brief, Mr. Speaker, thank you. Just a brief comment on the comment that I made. I have no objection at all, as Mr. Kelly says, that we take this group and go back to Washington, D.C., where the problem is. If the steering council thinks that that's a good move, fine. But what I was talking about is each one of us picking out a state we'd like to visit and go back and talk to those people. I didn't think was as effective as what our Washington delegation suggested, and that we've suggested here, that we go as a group. Now, I'm not objecting to that. That's where the problem is. If we want to go back there and they think that's the thing to do, then that's fine. But I'd like to make sure that Mr. Greening doesn't feel that I'm opposed to that. It was only that they're scattering around over 50 states or 49 other states. I don't think it's going to be as effective as going back to Washington. Thanks.
Appropriation bill is before us. Is there further debate? Mr. Gardner?
We have an at ease, Mr. Speaker.
Yeah. House, stand at ease. House, please come back to order. Representative Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, I'd move and ask unanimous consent that we return to second reading for purposes of a specific amendment.
Objection is noted, Mr. Gardner. Will the clerk read the specific amendment?
Amendment number one by Mr. Gardner. Page 1, line 19. Delete section 3. Add new section. Section 3. This act takes effect immediately in accordance with AS 11070C.
Is objection maintained? Hearing no objection. Mr. Gardner?
Mr. Speaker, I'd move and ask unanimous consent for adoption of amendment number 1.
Is there objection to the amendment? Hearing none, the amendment is adopted. Representative Gardner?
Mr. Speaker, I'd move and ask unanimous consent that committee substitute for House Bill 652 as amended be considered in gross advance of third reading, placed on final passage.
Representative Gardner places the advancement motion. Is there objection? Hearing none, the bill is in third reading. Will the clerk read the House Bill 652 for third reading?
Committee substitute for House Bill number 652 amended by the Finance Committee. An act making a special appropriation to the Department of Natural Resources for disbursement to the Steering Council for Alaska Lands and providing for an effective date.
The question is before you. Is there further debate? Members may proceed to vote. Has every member voted? The clerk may announce the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? The clerk can take the roll.
Thirty-six yeas, no nays, four excused.
And so House Bill number 652 has passed the House. The bill does carry an effective date. Mr. Gardner?
Mr. Speaker, I'd move unanimous consent that the roll call final passage of House Bill 652 be considered as roll call for effective date of this act.
Mr. Gardner moves the effective date clause. Is there objection? Hearing none, the effective date clause is adopted. Before moving on to the next item on the calendar, the chair would like to ask the indulgence of the body to make an introduction of guests. I think neither Mr. Gardner nor Mr. Freeman can see him from where he's seated, but a distinguished former member of this body is in Gallery A, Dick Whitaker, who served with a number of us in the 7th Legislature. The further introduction of guests? If not, the clerk will read the next item on the calendar.
House Joint Resolution number 60 by Cooper, requesting the federal government to remove solid waste on land in Alaska in accordance with the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act, Public Law 94-580. The Committee on Resources has had House Joint Resolution 60 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 60 and that it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Osterbach, Chairman, concurred in by Malone, Snyder, Urien, Akers, Miller, and Osterbach. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, I'd move and ask unanimous consent that the Resources Committee substitute for House Joint Resolution number 60 be adopted in lieu of the original resolution.
Mr. Gardner moves substitution of the Resources Committee substitute. Is there, moves adoption of the Resources Committee substitute. Is there objection? Hearing none, the Resources Committee substitute is adopted. Mr. Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent committee substitute for House Joint Resolution Number 60 be advanced, be engrossed in advanced third reading, placed on final passage.
Mr. Gardner moves an advancement motion. Is there objection? Hearing none, the House Joint Resolution Number 60 is in third reading. Will the clerk please read the resolution?
Committee substitute for House Joint Resolution Number 60 by the Resources Committee, requesting the federal government to remove solid waste on land in Alaska in accordance with the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act, Public Law 94-580.
The matter is with Mr. Cooper.
Mr. Speaker, the reason for this resolution is that throughout the history of Alaska, the federal government has placed a great deal of old machinery and junk and things on the public land, and there they sit for years and years and years. And as you know, because of the climatical conditions, that stuff just doesn't degenerate. It just sits there. And recently there's been an inventory of all this old junk that sits around the state, and in view of the congressional direction of recent years, we thought that it would be a good idea to ask them to come clean up their mess. So this is our way of doing it.
Mr. Urien?
Yeah, Mr. Speaker, I'm in favor of this resolution. Interesting, in the Resource Committee where you attended, that very interesting pictures were shown to us that would be interesting topics to take on our trip to Washington, D.C. or to other state capitals, wherever some of our members may go, speaking on B2 legislation to show those people outside who think that the federal government makes better landlords in the state of Alaska. It would dramatically show them that the trash and garbage that the feds have on their ground, I think, may help sway them on the D2 issue.
Representative Rudd?
May we be at ease?
House will stand at ease. House come back to order. Representative Hayes?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. During the recess, I noticed on page 2, lines 8 and 9, that there's been a change in the committee substitute from the original resolution. The change says, further resolved that the Alaska legislature strongly supports the Department of Environmental Conservation and its regulatory programs. Is the Department of Environmental Conservation the agency that's going to remove this debris, or are they responsible for inventorying it, or how do they get into this resolution, Mr. Speaker?
Mr. Speaker, I also made inquiry about that section during the at ease. Evidently, the meaning of it is that the legislature is going on record as supporting the Department of Environmental Conservation in its efforts to get the federal government to clean the debris off federal land. And with that meaning, I can certainly support that statement.
Just as a word of explanation from the chair, the department was at the resources meeting, indicated that they now do have that regulatory control even over the federal government, thanks to some new national legislation. And so this is in reference to the regulatory control that the DEC has over the federal in this case. The resolution is before you. Are you ready for the question? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk may take the roll.
Thirty-six yeas, no nays, four excused.
And so House Joint Resolution Number 60 has passed the House. Clerk, read the next item on the calendar.
Senate Joint Resolution Number 35 by the Rules Committee by request of the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee relating to the upgrading to state standards of the BIA's rural schools. The Committee on HES has had Senate Joint Resolution 35 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Parr, Chairman, concurred in by Bennett, Nackack, Cotton, Phillips, Parr, Byrne, and Buckle. I have no amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that Senate Joint Resolution Number 35 be considered engrossed, advanced third reading, and placed on final passage.
Mr. Gardner moves the bill from second to third reading. Is there objection? Hearing none, the resolution is in third reading. Will the clerk read the resolution for the third time?
Senate Joint Resolution Number 35 by the Rules Committee by request of the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee relating to the upgrading to state standards of the BIA's rural schools.
Are you ready for the question? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk may lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? The clerk may take the roll.
Thirty-six yeas, no nays, four excused.
And so Senate Joint Resolution Number 35 has passed the House. Members have before them on their desk one additional citation that's come up under special orders. Representative Gardner, or not special orders, but special order of business. Representative Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, I'd move as a national consent as special order of business that we take up the citation on the calendar by Representative Buchholz.
Hearing no objection, so ordered. Representative Buchholz.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, pro tem, I'd like to say a few words about this citation. It is in bilingual form. Actually, the official one is included in your list of bills being considered today. But this man doesn't live in my district. Actually, he does live in Mr. Urian's and Mr. Chatterton's district. He is a very well-respected gentleman who happens to come from the southern part of the Philippines. I came from the northern part. We don't speak the same language. The translations were done by me with the cooperation of people that I'd like to name, Galio and Solka Sidsid, Nestor Catley, and Melly James. We all worked on it. Only one of us came from the area where this language is commonly spoken. We do speak the language, but we are not very good at it. We were not born into the language. So the reason why I did this is that there are some people in the Anchorage area who may not understand some of the highfalutin language that I had in the English version. And so to simplify it and to make it read by many other people and appreciated by many other people, I decided to do the Tagalog version. So this is probably the first time that a citation that which you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem, had instigated has come before us as in a bilingual form. I would like to request that this body approve this citation.
Representative Brown.
Speaker, I see Mr. Chatterton rising. Just raises a point. I've always kind of wondered when Mr. Guy stands up and says something in Yupik or we have something like this. All we can do is rely on the word of the member who is very familiar with this. And I'll just assume that the honorable member from District 9 has not hidden something in the Filipino version that has cast some question upon the ancestry of either Mr. Chatterton or Mr. Urian.
Mr. Chatterton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. I will not comment to that. There's nothing hidden there. And I only wish to take a moment to thank my colleague from District 9 for both the minority leader and myself for introducing this. My wife has worked with this gentleman, and he is highly deserving of this citation. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Yeah. Representative Buchholz has moved approval of the citation. Is there objection? Hearing none, the citation is approved as moved by Representative Buchholz. And I'm sure, Representative Buchholz, that this is a historic first, not only for citation, but I'm sure it's the first bill as well, any piece of legislation that's passed this House in the Tagalog language. This brings us down to unfinished business. Special orders. Representative Beacons and then Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like the privilege of the floor to speak on general subject of oil taxation.
Hearing no objection, the floor is yours, sir.
Mr. Speaker, I think as everyone in this body knows, for the last several months, there's been an extensive ad campaign throughout the state of Alaska on the subject of oil taxes. Of course, I certainly encourage public debate on the issue. Excuse me, but I'd like to point up, I think, some of the problems with the manner in which the advertising is being done. I'm stimulated to do this by a headline which claims, among other things, that 74% of the people in my district are opposed to an oil tax increase, and that moreover only 4% of the people in my district would like us to increase taxes on the oil companies. Mr. Speaker, I think the situation is getting pretty serious, and I make no effort at all to put any kind of constraints on the oil industry or any other person in terms of what they can advertise and the claims that they can make. But I think it's getting serious because there's a determined effort to manipulate public opinion in an election year to change the goings-on in the legislature. And certainly this legislature should and does react to public opinion. But I think the public's getting one side of an issue, and I'd like to point out how misleading some of the statements, in fact, most of the statements that the oil industry is making in the newspapers and in other medias. For instance, the main effort they're trying to make is for us not to pass the income tax proposal that we have before us. And they're claiming that they are paying too much in taxes right now, and that we have special legislation aimed only at the oil industry, and that we're hurting investment in the state. All those statements are absolutely not true. In fact, in my view, it's extremely clear that we're not taxing the oil companies enough, and that they're getting away with escaping from state taxes and taking as profit money that is rightfully, if tax laws were applied equitably throughout the state, rightfully the public's, the state of Alaska's money, and not the oil company's money. For instance, Mr. Speaker, you and I and other corporations that are in the state and all of us in this room pay 9.4% income taxes. Everyone here does. The oil companies pay 2.4% income taxes. That's special legislation, all right, but it's in favor of the oil industry. And I don't think that we should allow that situation to continue. That's the intent of the bill, to rectify that situation. And by all means, if this legislature were to act fairly, I think they'd pass that law. And yet we can see that the oil industry feels that it's a good investment to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to try to convince us not to do that. The situation, in my view, is very clear that we should pass it. I think they feel that if they put out enough information to the contrary and make enough false claims, that at least some doubt will be cast upon our endeavors. And I would think that, and I would hope that the legislature, even though we're now confronted with a supposed poll that shows that members of my district do not agree with that increase, I would hope that we would look into that poll and see is it actually accurate. And I'll have a little more to speak about that in a second. But moreover, that we would debate the issue and vote on the issue on what we consider to be its merits, and not fall back from our positions because of the intimidation that the industry might be waving at us. I'd like to bring up another example of some of the what I consider to be very misleading manipulation of information and data. There is a report called the Fantas Report that the industry paid for. And they've been claiming in their ads that this report shows conclusively that the state of Alaska ranks 48th in the nation in terms of investment desirability. That is, there's only two states, according to this report, that are less desirable than the state of Alaska for the oil industry or any industry to invest in. This report is so patently ridiculous that I'm embarrassed that they would even make that claim. A lot of times some of the claims they make are debatable, but this one, in my view, is clearly a ridiculous claim, and I'd like to point out why. They're trying to get at taxes, of course. And if you look at, they do have about one-tenth of the questions that are addressed do have to do with taxes. And if you look at those questions, they're fairly good questions, I think. To what extent does the state rely upon corporate income taxes? We find in that question that Alaska is 22nd, below the U.S. average. What is the per capita property tax load on each of the states? Alaska is 13th in the nation, below the U.S. average. What is the impact of combined state and local taxes on a representative family? Alaska is 14th in the nation, well below the U.S. average. What is the personal income tax burden on each state? Alaska ranks 40th in this category, Mr. Speaker. And I'd like to point out, personal income tax, again, we're at 9.4%. We're one of the highest in the nation on that in that category. But the oil industry only pays 2.4%. I think that should be kept in mind. What is the level of state taxes in each state expressed on a per capita basis? Alaska ranks 34th. What is the level of local per capita taxes? Alaska ranks 17th. Mr. Speaker, if you add up all the considerations on taxes in this report, we average out to 26th in the nation. There are 50 states in the nation. 26th is about as close to the center of that as you can get. So that's a fairly well-balanced tax picture. That statistic in itself means nothing. It means we're right in the middle. We may or may not be taxing too high. It means nothing. But in order to get that average down to 48th, they've added into this report other considerations, and I'd like to address some of them. Remember now, these are supposed to be concluding that these are supposed to be criteria relevant to the investment decision of large corporations. An example on page 40, what proportion of the citizens called for selective service examinations in each state have been rejected for physical or mental reasons? On page 42, what is the median amount of schooling completed for those over 25 years of age in each state? Mr. Speaker, on page 44, what proportion of those enrolled in school in each state actually attend classes? On page 46, what proportion of those persons of voting age in each state actually voted in the most recent elections? On page 48, what proportion of the citizens of a state live in their own homes? On page 50, what is the illiteracy rate in the state? On page 68, how many students does the average teacher handle in each state? Mr. Speaker, all these components, all these criteria were equally weighted with the tax ones. And unfortunately and mysteriously, in most of those categories, the literacy, truancy, the rate of selective service rejections, the percent of doctors in the state, the percent of people who own their own homes, on all those kinds of criteria, the state ranks very, very low, 50th in most cases. And when you equally weight those averages in with the tax considerations, amazingly, Alaska comes out 48th in the nation. It's my view, of course, and I think it's reasonable to assume that that a firm considering an investment does not consider very, very deeply what the illiteracy rate is, what the rate of selective service examination rejection is, the percent of doctors in the states, or other things. Mr. Speaker, to my recollection, I can't think of a time when a headline said, illiteracy rate up, thousands of companies leave the state, leaving behind billions of dollars in oil. And I don't think we're ever going to see a headline like that. It's my view that this report is very close to what Mark Twain called the three kinds of lies. There's lies, then there's damn lies, and there's statistics. And I think this probably encompasses all three of those categories. So it's a good example, though. It's an example on you could take just about every claim that I know of that the industry's making in this $100,000 media campaign and examine it closely, and you'll find the same kinds of shabby statistical work, the same kind of manipulation of the data, and the same kind of misrepresentation to the public. Let's look at this poll now that they've been spending this money for several months and trying to get people to believe this. Let's look at this poll. It says here, city by city, the tally showed a majority of Alaskans opposed to higher taxes. Well, that's not unusual. I think we all know that everyone's opposed to higher taxes. And yet, remember, the headline claims, poll, no oil tax increase. And the data over here claims that 74% of the people in my district don't want an increase in oil taxes, not just regular taxes. But the person who took the poll admits, and this is a quote, it was felt that a possibility could exist that some residents may have expressed the desire for a reduction of their personal taxes rather than a reduction in oil taxes. Mr. Speaker, I believe that's the case. I've gotten mail from my constituents, and there are some who are opposed to higher taxes, and there are a lot who believe that we're right on course in our efforts here. And I think that this poll is another example in a long chain of very misleading and misrepresentative attempts on the part of the industry to manipulate public opinion and intimidate the legislature into not considering those bills on the merits, but considering them on the politics that have been created by the massive amounts of money that the oil industry is pumping into this campaign. And I think it's reasonable that we should consider whether or not our taxes have an effect on investment desirability in the state. In fact, I'm very concerned about that. And I have a bill ready for introduction which grants a tax rebate for exploration within the state in order to stimulate exploration in case there is any doubt that our tax structure does inhibit exploration. It doesn't, in my view. more money has been invested in the state of Alaska than any other state in the nation. And the reason for that is that this is where the profits are. That's the real criteria, not selective service rejections, not the number of doctors, but the profitability of the investment, and well, it should be. That's a criteria for investment in this state. And one of the reasons this state is profitable for investment is because our wells are very productive. The average well per day in Texas produces 20 barrels a day. In California, it's 21.7. In Louisiana, it's 64. In fact, there is no state in the nation except for Florida where the average well produces more than 100 barrels per day, and they're just barely over 100 barrels per day. But in Alaska, Mr. Speaker, the average well produces 7,000 barrels a day. And in Prudhoe Bay, there's one well that's producing 22,000 barrels a day every day. And that's why it's productive and profitable for the industry to invest in Alaska. And I'm glad that's the case. We're very fortunate that that's the case. But it also proves very conclusively that these considerations are very ridiculous and that our tax system is not, at the current time, in any way getting close to reducing investment. Thank you for the opportunity, and I know I've spoken too long. Thank you.
Representative Smith.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like the privilege of the floor to speak on short-sightedness.
Hearing no objection, the floor is yours.
Also in last night's Anchorage Times was an editorial. It's titled A Poor Substitute. I only saw it this morning, so I'm not prepared to give you a really eloquent, beautiful speech against the short-sightedness or on the short-sightedness of the editorial. It speaks to teleconferencing and says basically that it's a cheap trick and that it's a fad designed against moving the capital. I take a little bit of offense at this because we still have a state long after the capital moves. Anchorage isn't the only thing in this state, and the rest of us depend on Anchorage as much as Anchorage depends on us, or perhaps I should say that vice versa. They need the rest of this state, and we're still going to be there even after the capital moves. Because of that, you need some communication link with everyone, not just those that can get in their car and, as it says in this article, drive to Willow. There will still be a vast majority, or maybe not a majority, but at least half the state that still can't drive to Willow. So we do need something beyond a capital move. We need to be able to communicate with people in all parts of the state. I, for one, see teleconferencing as a real good way to go, a way for us to see not only the people who are conveniently able to reach the capital, but to communicate with the people who are still in Barrow, in Kotzebue, and those, for crying out loud, that are left in Juneau. I would hope that the people in Anchorage will not be duped by such editorials as this that are clearly meant to make Anchorage the only place of existence. And believe me, it's not the center of the world. Thank you.
Representative Osterbeck.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like the privilege of the floor to speak on D2.
Hearing no objection, the floor is yours.
I'm talking about different legislators or a group going down to Washington, D.C. When the D2 Council was formed and everything, we put in $20,000 for any legislators who want to travel down to Washington, D.C. and talk on the D2 land. Right now in the budget we have $18,000 left. So that shows that there haven't been too much interest of people going to Washington, D.C. because the money was there for their tickets and per diem, I imagine, was for per diem too. On another thing, I've been down to Washington, D.C. twice, and our law firm, what we got down there, they take us around, make appointments for us. And if the whole group went down, I would say that the people on the D2 Steering Council would get in to see some of the senators, and the rest of the legislators wouldn't know where to go. When you come down there, their offices are so small and they're so busy, they don't want to take the time. And you couldn't get a whole group. You couldn't get 60 legislators into one office. But I'm in favor of the legislators that want to go down, but to go down in small groups where they could make arrangements to meet with whoever they want to talk to, and I think it would be real effective. Cyberling and Udall, which you all know is election year coming up, and they're very powerful, and a lot of the senators down there and congressmen told us, we don't intend to come to Alaska, and we don't care what they do with it. We're going to vote along with Cyberling or Young to the benefit of our reelection. And that's just about the way it stands down there. So I think it would be great for people to go down in small groups and make contacts with our law firm down there or whoever's down there what can get them to the different people they want to talk to. And from when we went down there, and they're looking at a lot of our comments, what we put in on D2, and I think it's very effective to the bill, Senate bill, or 39 anyway, what's the number of the bill? And we're going to have another meeting in a couple of weeks and trying to get a stand from the state what we can come down and say this is what we want, and we're hoping to have that drafted up in a couple of weeks and be able to bring it before the body and see if that's what everybody wants, and then put it in and say this is what we want, so we're not coming from all different directions. They would say, well, you don't know what you want, so we'll tell you what you're going to get. And one more thing, I talked about a conflict to our chairman. Just before the meeting was over, our chairman, Steve Cooper, turned the gavel over to the vice chairman, which is Senator Joe Orsini. And we took a vote on it, and Senator Coletta talked in favor of keeping Cooper in, and also did Joe Orsini. If they voted against him, I imagine Senator Joe Orsini would have been our chairman today. But I'm proud to tell you that they all voted for him to keep him in. And I thank you.
Are there further special orders? Representative Danquist?
Mr. Speaker, thank you. Just for a moment, I'd like privilege of the floor to make some comments about the oil companies and taxation.
Hearing no objection, the floor is yours, sir.
I won't speak but for just a moment, but I really think that if I ever heard a bunch of misuse of statistics, I just heard it a moment ago when Mr. Meekins got up and tried to defend his position that he's taken on oil taxes. We can talk about the oil companies are not paying but 2.5% and the rest are paying 9%, but there's a great deal more behind that statistic that he's throwing out, that he's accusing the oil companies of not putting out the facts. He knows very well that that's a very complicated situation. We're taking testimony on that at the present time. In fact, the state of Alaska is appropriating money to study just to find out a little bit more about where the oil companies do stack up as far as other states in taxation. The fact is that I think that Mr. Meekins and a very astute legislator, I think he probably before the debate started got off on this oil taxation, and now the people are saying that they don't want it, and I frankly think that he's just as guilty as the oil companies that he's accusing of spreading around a bunch of half-truths, as I heard here this morning. I'm not supporting the oil companies in this position, one way or the other, but I don't think that you can get up and make those kind of statements when you find yourself 74% of the people in your district disagree with you and blame it on advertisement. I think they're much smarter than that, and the people in Alaska know what the taxation is. They're not being led down the primrose path by an oil company.
Point of order, Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
State your point of order, Mr. Brown.
It appears that the member is calling into question the motives of another member in debate. I just wonder if that's what he has in mind.
The chair is going to rule that at the present time that the testimony is within the areas allowed by the joint rules.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think probably that I've said all I'm going to say anyway, other than I just want to make sure that when we're on the floor, I think we ought to, if we accuse someone of going out, I think in 1978, by the way, you're going to see a great deal of advertisement that may not necessarily be true to persuade people to affect this legislature. Thank you.
The further special orders, Representative Bradley.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to make the privilege of the floor to make cavalier and flippant remarks.
Hearing no objection, the floor is yours, Bradley.
Mr. Speaker, the prior speaker under special orders, I don't know whether this is within the rules or not. It's been a long time since I read them. But, I mean, mercy sakes, the prior speaker voted no against the oil income tax, equalizer, making it fair last year, and various other special orders remarks on this floor got up and said how we should take into consideration the little old lady in tennis shoes in Pasadena because she owned 8 shares of Exxon stock and how our behavior up here might impact the proceeds on the profitability of that tax and then referring to Mr. Meekins' misrepresentation was simply a representation of the misrepresentations found in the oil companies' studies and boilerplate BS. And mercy sakes, they're either referring to us as nuts or as dumb, or both. And if there's one thing that my chairmate isn't on this subject, is nuts or dumb. In fact, he busted them right where they belonged to be called into question on their spurious, nonsensical statistics. And I think quoted aptly the age-old sage Mark Twain. And I'm sure Shakespeare, as another sage, would have had some good comments to make about that, or in fact, a couple of other wise people. And if there's one guy that, of course, we should all, if we don't like him personally, at least the office should have some credence, is the President of the United States, who's taken the oil companies to task in the last 2 years. So, thanks.
Mr. Swanson.
Yeah, Mr. Speaker. I guess if this was the starting of the day and you asked me to say the prayer, I'd say, let's turn off that silly television so we can go down to lunch.
Representative Barr.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to have the privilege of the floor to say one sentence.
The floor is yours, sir.
Mr. Speaker, the only poll that means anything is that when it comes in a ballot box in the primary and general elections.
Are there further special orders? Representative Phillips.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem, I'd just like to make one comment about this report. And it was about 30 days ago or something like that when we first discussed it. I think, in order to answer everybody's questions, like if they take a look at page 38, I think they can make a sound judgment whether we are overtaxing the oil industry or not. And they list the criteria here, and all I can say is just look at that page and make your own judgment.
Are there further special orders? Mr. Gardner?
I'm under committee announcements.
Chairman Gardner, your committee announcement.
Judiciary Committee will meet at 3 o'clock today on the criminal code.
Chairman Brown?
Mr. Speaker, Pro Tem, the House Select Committee on Telecommunications will meet. I've been in pretty bad shape. I presume today's Wednesday, is that right?
Okay. It is indeed.
Tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock in room 207, and the following day, Friday, in room 207 in the Assembly at 8 a.m., to consider a report from the Governor's Office of Telecommunications on the TV demonstration project, House Bill 545 and other TV proposals, to take testimony from representatives of private industry and others with regard to what may follow the TV demonstration project. And rather than standing up again under announcement, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to remind the body that at 5 o'clock this evening in the Gold Room of the Baranoff Hotel, there'll be a demonstration of a very unique and new system of transmitting two television pictures by only one transponder. And there'll also be a demonstration of something else impliedly, and that is the transmission of satellite pictures to you with no RCA interface at all. That may or may not be good, but it's nice to know there's some competition. And the involvement is Western Union and the Robert Wold Organization and Mr. Roy Pascal of BC Cable. And I understand there'll be some refreshments. I don't know if they're going to have dancing girls or anything. And the members who do attend are asked to be there shortly before 5 because there is or on time because there is a time problem in getting everything connected all the way down to the lower 48 with regard to the demonstration and getting the programming on there. Hopefully we'll end up seeing hard wire rather than off-the-air hookups from the networks in the lower 48.
Chairman Bradley?
Mr. Speaker, House State Affairs 115 this afternoon. Be taking up House Bill 762, Special Appropriation of Legislative Affairs for Travel. This is in regards to D2 and HCR 100, adjourning the legislature for the period April 15th to the 19th, 78.
Chairman Parr?
Mr. Speaker, Hess will meet at 3 this afternoon on House Bill 737, Indemnification of University of Alaska and School District Employees, and at 7 p.m. on House Bill 472, Rights of the Mentally Ill. And, Mr. Speaker, on every member's desk is an announcement that beginning 2 weeks from today, the Hess Committee will be take up all the university bills in, and I want to give members advance notice in case they want to have some sponsor substitutes or other bills in.
Chairman Osterbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Resource Committee will meet today at 1:30 p.m., taking up House Bill 814, Anchorage Recreation Area, House Bill 835, Reindeer Range Survey.
Mr. Minority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to move and ask the Senate that Representative Hogg to be excused from calling House tomorrow.
Hearing no objection, the member will be excused on the dates indicated. Vice Chairman Freeman.
Mr. Speaker, House Finance Committee will meet at 1:15 this afternoon. Further consideration on House Bill 133, Municipal Land Selections. Tomorrow morning at 8:30, we will take up House Concurrent Resolution 91, University of Alaska Power Plant, House Bill 726, Special Appropriation Department of Education, Alaska Broadcasting Commission, House Bill 665, Marine Transportation Advisory Board, and Senate Bill 432, Powers of the Legislative Budget and Audit.
Before Mr. Gardner places the adjournment motion, I have a couple of announcements I just brought up to the chair with me. We had a communication from Admiral Hayes' office. The Coast Guard cutter Polar Sea will be arriving in Juneau on Saturday. There will be a VIP reception on Sunday from 4 to 6 p.m. for all members of the House and Senate and their spouses or dates. And the Polar Sea will be moored at the ferry terminal. The reception is from 4 to 6 p.m. In case of bad weather, the boat will be anchored, and the Liberty boat will depart from the Cape Coral Pier, that's behind the subport building, and leave every half hour to and from the ship. Since this is a VIP reception, we have had a request from the Coast Guard to give them a body count. So I'll ask members to raise their hands if they think they're going to be able to attend that reception from 4 to 6 on Sunday, and I'm just going to assume that in most cases there'll be a member and another person with them. Would you indicate by raising your hands? Okay, we get about 11, so that'll be roughly 22 people or so. If later on you decide that you would like to go in great numbers, let me know and we'll call the Coast Guard and up the count. Mr. Nackick?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May we have a brief at each, please?
Sorry, we're getting that gremlin again. Mr. Nackett, would you? Yes. The House, or what's left of it, come back to order. Apparently, members are getting hungry. I have one other brief announcement. Representative Cooper will be the speaker at the Democratic luncheon today at noon. Mr. Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, I'd move and ask unanimous consent that we stand adjournment until 10 a.m. tomorrow.
Hearing no objections, ordered.